Imagine finding out that the star witness testifying against you in a major criminal trial just cost his city $5 million.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and not only that, but he is heading to federal prison, all because of a group chat.
Right, which sounds crazy, but it happens.
Exactly. I mean, usually when a police texting scandal hits the headlines, there is this very predictable, almost comforting script that plays out. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. The classic PR response.
Right. A news story drops, a department spokesperson steps up to a podium, and they tell you, the public, they say, these messages are offensive, they don't reflect our values, and the officers involved are facing internal discipline.
Yeah, they treat it like a communications issue.
Exactly. A really ugly PR nightmare, but ultimately just words on a screen. But today, we are taking you on a custom-tailored deep dive to completely shatter that script.
We really are, because it's so much deeper than that.
Our mission today is to explore how these digital paper trails in police departments, they don't just cause embarrassment, they signal deep operational contamination.
Yeah, contamination that triggers this massive legal domino effect.
Right. We are talking severe federal criminal charges, multi-million dollar civil settlements, and literally hundreds of court cases collapsing overnight.
To do this, we are anchoring our deep dive in a deeply researched, comprehensive article. It's called The Antioch Blueprint by Eric Sanders.
And his background is really what makes this analysis so compelling, right?
Oh, for sure. Sanders is a retired NYPD officer who eventually transitioned into a civil rights litigator. So, he brings this really authentic inside-the-gate perspective.
He actually knows how it all works.
Exactly. He knows the
Yeah.
granular details of how these departments function, from the squad car all the way up to the judge's bench.
Okay, let's unpack this. But before we really tear into the mechanics of how these scandals destroy court cases, let's just set a quick ground rule for our discussion.
That is a very good idea.
The source material we are analyzing today deals with, highly sensitive, politically charged topics regarding race, discrimination, and the justice system.
Right. And it's important to state that our goal on this deep dive is absolutely not to take a side.
Exactly. We aren't here to point fingers or endorse any specific political viewpoint. Our mission is strictly to impartially report on the facts.
The facts, the legal arguments, and the structural consequences, exactly as they are laid out by the author.
Right. So, looking strictly at the legal mechanics, that is really the only way to understand why departments can no longer just write these scandals off as bad optics.
Yeah, and Sanders points to a very specific case study to show why that classic institutional defense, the few bad apples myth, is completely falling apart.
And that case study is the city of Antioch, California.
Right. So in December 2025, the Associated Press reported that 45 Antioch police officers were involved in exchanging these highly offensive text messages.
And just putting that number in perspective for you listening, 45 officers wasn't just some small road unit working the night shift.
No, not at all.
That was nearly 40% of the entire Antioch Police Department. I mean, 40% of the force.
Which is just a massive chunk of the department. And the Contra Costa County District Attorney's Office released the contents of these texts, and they revealed just staggering levels of bias.
Yeah, it wasn't just off-color banter.
Not even close. The officers were sharing explicit racial animus, homophobic language, and sexist slurs. They circulated guerrilla imagery directed at black individuals.
Wow.
Yeah, they made running jokes about people driving while black. And incredibly tellingly, they showed explicit hostility toward the department's own body cameras.
It's like finding a patch of black mold on your living room drywall.
Oh, that's a really good way to look at it.
Right. You don't just paint over it, call it an optics problem, and tell your family the living room is fine.
Because it's not fine.
Exactly. That mold is actually the first readable evidence of a massive hidden plumbing leak that is destroying the walls from the inside.
Yeah.
You don't have an aesthetics problem.
Yeah.
You have severe structural operational contamination.
What's fascinating here is that the federal government views that exact structural contamination very, very aggressively.
Also.
Well, Sanders points out that the Antioch texts included officers openly discussing fabricating confessions. I mean, they were explicitly invoking the phrase violating civil rights in their everyday messages.
Wait, literally using those words.
Literally using those
Yeah,
words.
yeah.
And the second that happens, you trigger immediate federal involvement under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act and the Safe Streets Act.
So it immediately goes above the local level.
Exactly. Those specific laws basically state that if a local law enforcement agency receives federal funding, they are legally bound to operate without discrimination.
Which makes sense.
Right. If your officers are texting about making up evidence based on race, the federal government steps in, because lawful policing and community trust are entirely interdependent.
So the chat was really just the symptom.
Exactly. The disease was a total department-wide enforcement failure.
So the federal government steps in to investigate the department's plumbing, so to speak. But meanwhile, you have this massive backlog of actual criminal cases that these 45 officers worked on.
Oh, yeah. Hundreds of cases.
Right. So what happens to the people sitting in jail or facing trial because of an arrest made by an officer we now know is heavily biased?
That is the turning point where the scandal bleeds out of the police precinct and directly infects the broader justice system.
Because the real damage from these texts isn't reputational, it's evidentiary.
Exactly. The public record in Antioch showed that even murder defendants were receiving reduced dispositions.
Wait, murder defendants?
Yes. Murder charges were being downgraded simply because the credibility environment around the arresting officers had completely collapsed.
Okay, wait, hold on. I need to stop you there and push back on this because I think this is where a lot of people get confused.
Sure, go ahead.
Let's say an officer pulls someone over, legally searches the trunk, and finds a massive stash of illegal firearms. That is physical, tangible evidence. Are you telling me that a tasteless joke sent in a private group chat a year prior somehow gets a guy with a trunk full of guns off the hook? I mean, how does a judge justify throwing that out?
This raises an important question, and it really comes down to the fundamental mechanics of how evidence is presented to a jury.
Okay.
The courts don't just decree that because an officer used a bad word, a dangerous suspect gets to walk free. That's not how it works.
What actually happens?
The issue is that the text messages themselves become legally admissible exhibits in that suspect's trial.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. A defense attorney will stand in front of a judge and jury, hold up those text messages, and use them to prove motive, animus, selective targeting, or dishonest case construction.
Ah, so the defense attorney basically says, this officer has a documented history of targeting minority drivers and joking about making up confessions. How do we know he didn't plant those guns?
You've hit the nail on the head. If a defense attorney can plausibly argue that an officer has a documented bias, well, that officer's testimony is legally impeachable.
Which ruins the whole case.
Exactly. The prosecutor can no longer put that officer on the stand and present them as a neutral, truthful witness. It introduces massive, insurmountable, reasonable doubt.
Wow.
And this is precisely why Sanders notes that narcotics units are especially vulnerable to these texting scandals.
Because narcotics work relies incredibly heavily on the officer's word, right?
Almost entirely. Think about a standard buy and bust operation. An undercover officer claims they bought drugs from a suspect with marked cash, and then another officer arrests them.
Right. It's a very controlled narrative.
Yeah. The entire narrative hinges on the judge and jury believing the officer's sequence of events. There often isn't a victim to testify. It is literally just the state's word against the defendant's.
So if the officer's credibility is shot,
then the case is shot. Once the officer's neutrality is destroyed by their own digital footprint, prosecutors are legally forced to drop the cases because their star witness is compromised.
And the liability doesn't just sit with the district attorney losing a few cases. This is where it aggressively shifts back onto the officers themselves.
Oh, absolutely.
And ultimately, it shifts onto you, the city taxpayers. Antioch didn't stop at just putting 40% of their force on paid administrative leave. We are talking about hard federal prison time.
Yeah, real prison sentences. For example, former Antioch officer Morteza Amiri was sentenced in June 2025 to 84 months.
Wow, 84 months, that is 7 years.
7 years in federal prison. He was convicted of deprivation of rights under color of law, falsifying records, and a side fraud scheme involving police pay raises.
Let's clarify that legal term real quick. Deprivation of rights under color of law.
Sure.
That essentially means using the power of the bat, like the authority granted to you by the state, to illegally strip someone of their constitutional rights.
That is the exact definition.
Yeah.
And Amiri wasn't the only one. Devin Vinger got 7.5 years in December 2025.
7.5 years.
Yeah. For conspiracy against rights, steroid distribution, and obstruction. Then in March 2026, Eric Rombo received over 4 years in federal prison for conspiracy and deprivation of rights counts.
Here's where it gets really interesting, and this is a crucial distinction for you to understand.
Definitely.
The offensive text messages themselves didn't necessarily have to be the charged crime. I mean, it is not fundamentally illegal to send a bad text.
Right. Being offensive isn't a federal crime on its own.
But the texts acted as the gateway evidence. They gave federal prosecutors the probable cause to come in, audit these officers' entire professional lives, and that is where they found the actual actionable fraud and civil rights violations.
Exactly. And while the officers are being shipped off to federal prison, the city is left facing massive financial penalties.
Which hurts the taxpayers.
Oh, big time. The Associated Press reported in December 2025 that 23 people affected by this litigation reached a $4.6 million settlement with the city of Antioch.
$4.6 million.
Yeah, and that settlement reflects a very stark legal recognition by the courts. It shows that racist police communications are probative.
Meaning what, exactly?
Meaning they serve as actual proof of real civil rights injuries against the public.
Man, that $4.6 million Antioch had to pay out, that is not Monopoly money. That is taxpayer money.
It's real money coming out of the city budget.
That's your money that isn't going to fix potholes or fund local schools or build community programs. And it's all because a group of officers felt comfortable operating a deeply offensive WhatsApp group. It's staggering.
It really is. And the financial cost is just one piece of the fallout.
What else happened?
The Department of Justice agreement with Antioch mandated intense structural consequences that basically stripped the department of its autonomy.
So they have to report to the DOJ now.
Yeah. They are federally required to formally track canine bites, every single use of force, and demographic patterns of exactly who is being stopped on the street. It completely disrupts long-term hiring stability and department-wide promotions.
I have to imagine this completely paralyzes the department's hierarchy. I mean, you can't exactly promote a guy to sergeant if he is actively under a DOJ investigation for faking police reports.
Exactly. The DOJ agreement formally tied any future promotions to an officer's demonstrated integrity and report accuracy.
That makes total sense.
Yeah. It mandated that officers under serious misconduct investigations have their promotions stayed immediately. Furthermore, it utilizes a legal standard called preponderance of the evidence.
Which basically means it is more likely than not that misconduct occurred, right?
Right. So if an officer is found guilty of intentional discrimination or false documentation under that standard, they face a presumptive 2-year ban on serving as field training officers.
Which means you essentially cripple the department's ability to even train new hires.
Exactly.
Your veteran officers are legally barred from mentoring anyone because they can't be trusted to pass down clean tactics. It is a full-spectrum legitimacy crisis.
It is. And having seen the Antioch blueprint, which really serves as the absolute worst-case scenario for a modern police department, Sanders takes this analytical lens and applies it to a major unfolding situation today.
Right. He is issuing a massive warning flare regarding the ongoing scandal within the NYPD's Patrol Borough Manhattan North Narcotics Unit.
Because Sanders argues the NYPD has a long, documented history of dodging full accountability. They do this by utilizing a tactic he calls fragmenting scandals.
Fragmenting, so breaking it apart.
Yeah. Fragmentation is the institutional strategy of breaking a massive systemic failure into little administrative pieces so it doesn't look like a disease.
Oh, I see.
Instead of looking at the whole picture, the department treats racial hostility as a private human resources issue and separates it entirely from actual police enforcement and public safety.
So they keep the HR issues away from the policing issues.
Exactly. Sanders cites several historical examples where the NYPD absorbed massive scandals without a complete structural reckoning.
Like the 113th Precinct scandal he mentioned.
Right.
Instead of a deep structural fix, the department's response was essentially mass transferring officers. They just shuffled the deck.
That's all they did.
The officers kept their jobs. They just moved the problem to a different neighborhood without addressing the underlying racial hostility.
Sanders also points to the Dirty 30 scandal, which involved highly organized, command-level corruption and the horrific Abner Louima case.
Yeah, those were massive.
And he specifically highlights the landmark stop-and-frisk cases, Floyd, Ligon, and Davis. These were major federal lawsuits where the courts literally had to step in, appoint a federal monitor, and legally force the NYPD to change how they conducted street stops.
Because the department wouldn't fix it themselves?
Exactly. The courts had to do that because the department's internal discipline systems completely failed to correct their own systemic racially biased enforcement.
But the most immediate glaring warning he points to is the Joseph Franco scandal.
Yes, that is a huge one.
If you haven't followed this one, Franco was an NYPD detective whose credibility completely collapsed regarding false narcotics narratives.
And the fallout was just unbelievable.
The fallout from just this single detective's credibility issues contributed to the dismissal or clearing of over 500 cases across New York City.
500 cases?
Yeah, including 324 cases in the Bronx alone. Just think about the sheer scale of that. Over 500 cases dismissed.
It's hard to even wrap your head around.
That is 500 times the legal system wasted immense time and taxpayer money. Or 500 times an individual was wrongly accused and had their life upended.
The sheer volume of dropped cases is incredible. But what Sanders emphasizes is that the system absorbed Franco's evidentiary damage without producing a clean department-wide criminal reckoning on the merits.
So they survived it again.
Yeah, they survived it through that exact fragmentation tactic. They localized the blame to avoid a structural overhaul.
So what does this all mean? Applying all of this to the current Manhattan North narcotics tech scandal, Sanders is basically warning that the NYPD might think they can just run their old playbook.
They probably think they can.
Right. They might think they can reshuffle the deck, transfer some people, suspend a few others, and survive the news cycle like they did in the past.
But Antioch proves that the mathematical reality of the digital age has changed the game.
It really has. Antioch provides a literal step-by-step roadmap for federal authorities to bypass local internal affairs and connect the dots between private texts and unconstitutional street policing.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the legal system is evolving rapidly to catch up with our digital reality.
Yeah, the old tricks just don't work anymore.
Exactly. The deliberate separation that departments used to rely on, you know, keeping HR issues quarantined away from the courtroom, is totally collapsing.
Because you just can't hide it.
Right. Today, a racist chat immediately becomes a credibility issue. And that credibility issue triggers strict legal disclosure rules, which are often referred to as Brady obligations.
And Brady obligations mean they have to tell a defense, right?
Yes. Prosecutors are legally, constitutionally bound to disclose evidence of an officer's bias or dishonesty to the defense attorneys.
Which stalls the officers' careers, destroys their current caseload, and ultimately invites the federal government to come audit the department.
Exactly. The internal culture of a police department is simply no longer a private HR matter. It is a highly visible, legally discoverable, public trust and legal liability crisis.
It's all out in the open now.
Antioch showed the entire country that once a scandal becomes collective and involves a large group chat, rather than just an isolated individual, the institution completely loses the ability to say, we can just surgically remove the bad apples.
Because the entire barrel is rotting from the inside out.
Yeah, exactly. The imminent risk for Manhattan North, or frankly, any police department facing a digital footprint scandal today, is that their past convictions get reopened.
Oh, man, it just snowballs.
It does. Their current active cases become totally impossible to prosecute, and their highly specialized units destabilize from the inside before any official disciplinary findings are even formally issued.
The damage is already done.
Right. The damage to public safety starts the exact second the public and the courts can no longer assume a police officer is neutral.
It is a phenomenal breakdown of how real-world consequences actually manifest from what seems like a simple news headline.
It really is an eye-opening perspective.
To quickly recap the journey we've taken today, we started by dismantling the illusion of the few bad apples and the naive idea that tech scandals are just about optics.
Right.
We traced how digital bigotry mathematically destroys an officer's credibility in a court of law, allowing defense attorneys to impeach their testimony.
Which is the real turning point.
Exactly. We watched that evidentiary crisis lead directly to 84-month federal prison sentences and nearly $5 million taxpayer settlements in Antioch.
Severe, tangible consequences.
And finally, we saw how all of this serves as a massive, unavoidable warning flare for the NYPD's narcotics units today.
Yeah, as Sanders so perfectly distills it, the group chat is not a sideshow. It is the diagnostic MRI image of a much larger institutional disease. We want to thank you for taking this deep dive with us today, because the mechanics of this complex legal machinery, they matter deeply to you, the listener.
They absolutely do.
Because at the end of the day, as taxpayers, you're the ones writing the checks for those multi-million dollar civil settlements.
Yeah, it's your money on the line.
And you are the community members whose fundamental public safety relies entirely on the integrity of these local departments. When police credibility collapses, the entire justice system in your city stalls, leaving victims without closure and communities without trust.
It affects absolutely everyone in the ecosystem. And, you know, as we wrap up, I want to leave you with a final thought to ponder on your own.
Okay, let's hear it.
We've seen how private texts become permanent legal evidence that can unwind years of complex police work. So if our entire justice system relies on the foundational assumption of an officer's neutral credibility, and our digital footprints are now permanent, easily discoverable, and practically impossible to erase.
Very true.
Are we moving toward a future where every single law enforcement officer's private digital life must be subject to continuous algorithmic auditing just to maintain the legal viability of their arrests?
Man, it's a profound question about the future intersection of privacy, technology, and public trust.
Because if the mold is already visible on the drywall, the only way to know that the house is actually safe is to inspect the plumbing every single day.